podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the start of Tour Live. Neil Atkinson with Belinda Barty, Adam Smith and John Gibbons, Andy Heaton producing, which means he's responsible for everything. And we are going to be talking about international football to start with before looking ahead to Liverpool's game against Watford. I can't wait to watch the Reds again, not least Belinda, because I am absolutely done in with these internationals. They've managed to move themselves from 2 till 3. Not all of our players have finished yet. There's a chance that Fabinho and Alisson Becker could somehow see action tonight. It feels as though everybody is having a big laugh at our expense. Those of us who love club football these days, international breaks seemingly don't end.
No, they don't. They just go on and on. And then obviously, you know, we just spoke before, but yeah, I've been at a breaking point myself. There's just too many games. It's not enough games that I care about. Like, as I said, I went to the cinema last weekend and found that spending my time, you know, watching a movie on the Saturday night rather than watching whoever was playing like international football was just far more enjoyable.
What you go and see?
James Bond.
Pretty good. Long, I believe.
Long, but to be fair, it's well-paced. I would say that. Like, it didn't feel like it dragged. So, yeah, that was for my mum. She wanted to go. So, yeah. But we're talking Liverpool here, not the movies.
Well, no, I think Adam's about to steam in two-footed on Bond, but we'll come back to you in a second, Belinda. You just hang on for dear life. So what is to be done with this, John, at this point? It's interesting the players are speaking out, and that to me is Courtois is one example, but I feel as though this is going to become a recurring theme. They're almost going to take a relay race on this now, the players, and I think that it's going to become a situation where almost every 3 months or so, at least every 3 months or so, one high-profile player is going to be saying something.
Yeah, I agree, and it's not hard to find sort of... you know, baddies in football, really, because it feels like someone's about to behave badly at any point and within increasingly in their own self-interest. But what's noticeable to me on sort of all of this really is that there's very little talk of, oh, they're being paid this much or that much. They can just sort of get on with it. That seems to have sort of, you know, not disappeared, but in this instance, it's not sort of being brought up really. You know, we have to wait till they talk about the mental health or something for that to sort of get launched in the face. But within this sort of, you know, instance, you know, it seems to me that everyone's pretty much decided that the international clubs are taking the piss. You know, we talked a little bit before about the move from 2 to 3 games, and you know, you mentioned that briefly, Neil, and also just the scheduling. Like, I'm sure Brazil are playing after us this time. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, we're Saturday lunchtime and they're playing Saturday night, and it's like, you know, and it just feels like it's the disregard, it's the arrogance, it's the we'll do what we want. You know, we've got them, and I think sometimes, you know, you can push, and as I say, that's not to say that, you know, the clubs are sort of, you know, always behaving brilliantly and things.
There are
like
no
that.
Angels, but there can be bigger demons.
Yeah, and at the moment, the biggest demons, as I say, are the international, you know, federations individually and FIFA are doing sort of very little about it. And Courtois said it itself, they're only interested in sort of lining their own pockets and it's sort of footballers. And I think it does feel like there's a bit of a change in tide, really, and there's less people going, well, you know, I'm not just going to get on with it anymore and I'm going to speak out. It's great that Courtois did. I hope others follow. I hope there could be some sort of, you know, people get together. You know, it doesn't have to be necessarily be a formal union, but you know, just a WhatsApp group of captains for the start. They sorted loads last year in the Premier League. Maybe internationally they can box this.
We carry no candles here for Manchester City, Adam, but the idea of Fernand Torres having been injured in a game and then playing another game, carrying that injury whilst playing international football. I mean, Guardiola will give his press conference tomorrow, and I really hope he doesn't hold back because you very much shouldn't. It could be a Liverpool player that happens to next time. It's happened to Liverpool players in the past. There was all the stuff around the treatments of Sturridge by Hodgson to go back. There's, you know, Thiago in the world in the Euros as well. You just end up in this situation where you've the player's welfare has got to be absolutely paramount. And then the next thing that's got to be paramount is the interests of club over country, especially during the club season. By all means, maybe play a bit fast and loose if you want in June, but do not be playing fast and loose with club footballers in October, please.
Yeah, and I think it's really important actually not to conflate how a lot of us feel about international football and the mistakes that are being made around international football, because I despise international football because I don't have a country that I follow. I hate the breaks. The breaks are placed idiotically, especially at this, so because there's like 3 breaks now, but you know, before the start of the season, Christmas, and then nothing till March. I mean, it's insane the way they do it. I hate it all, but that's not why the players are getting annoyed. Thibaut Courtois isn't there going, I'm really annoyed at this because I can't be arsed playing for Belgium, the shite. He's getting annoyed because he doesn't want to have to play three games in a week. He doesn't think it's right that players are having to play again and again and again. And international managers have to be a little bit more responsible with the players they've got at their disposal. The Torres thing is, it's ridiculous. It's utterly ridiculous. And as you say, I hope Guardiola goes in two-footed over it, because it's just a nonsense that he's picked up an injury and then been played. And if Guardiola had done that, then everyone would be going, what's going on? Why is he allowed to be manager still if he's not putting the players' welfare at the top of his list? It shouldn't be a better excuse for international managers just because it's their couple of weeks with them. They're not allowed to, you know, ride these players like dead horses. What's the phrase? That's not a phrase, but you know the phrase I'm trying to think of.
Flogging them,
that's the one. Yeah, they shouldn't be allowed to flog them like a dead horse. It's just not right. And the players, as John's kind of touched on, it has to be, I think, the players that start to turn around and do something about it, because FIFA and UEFA, as we know, will just keep on taking the mickey and as long as they can get away with it.
The problem is, Belinda, is that there are no goodies, as John sort of framed it before. Everyone's always about to be awful and everyone always acts within self-interest. But there's a point, I think, there's a breaking point. I thought Courtois was interesting about this, if you take the wider idea, that trust is a difficult thing, and it's a thing that you can very easily lose, but it's a difficult thing to get back. And increasingly, and I'm going all the way back to when, for instance, there was talk of some players in the Premier League either taking a pay cut or not taking a pay cut during the pandemic. Trust, I think, played a big part in that. Trust for the ownership, trust that that any ownerships right the way through the league are good or bad or indifferent, but the idea of trusting them to do the right thing, full stop. Trust seems to be in really short supply in football between clubs, from players to governing bodies to clubs. And there's lots of good reason for that. But someone somewhere, somehow, has got to start acting firstly in the interests of footballers, but also secondly in the interest of actually building trust.
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, like, I remember watching Alisson's interview just after the last international break. He didn't get to go. And it actually seemed quite worrying that he was having to talk in an interview about sort of, I just have to trust that the club are, doing what's best for me, and they're trying to do things and put things in place. And it felt really bad. Like, and then when there was that rumour coming about that Brazil or FIFA were going to punish the clubs for not letting the players go. And it's like, well, how has someone like Alisson done anything wrong in that situation? You know, he's only been doing what he's been told to do. He's employed by this club and, he's told he can't go, and now he's going to get punished for it. Like, it's just ridiculous. It all fundamentally comes down to money as well, right, and greed. So where is this going to be the turning point? Is it going to take a player having a career-ending injury in one of these international breaks for someone to take notice of what these players want and what they need?
I think on it, John, I think there's little things that could be done. It wouldn't take much effort. If, for instance, and I wouldn't be averse to it, because I think that, and I suspect that Jurgen Klopp wouldn't be averse to it either if it was the idea that it was impacting everyone. But if, for instance, the Premier League said, we're concerned about players having too much burden put on them, what we'll say is that no player can play more than 34 games worth of minutes in a season. No outfield player can play more than 34 games worth of minutes in a season. And that impacts everybody. So there's not the idea that, that has to hit. It hits Ben May as much as it hits Virgil van Dijk, if you sort of see what I mean. But that they said, no, we're going to do this because someone's got to take the lead. And again, this idea, the other thing that when we talk about no trust, the other thing I think that there is a problem within football is because football has become this, well, and perhaps always has been this environment where no one ever wants to give ground because they don't want to show weakness. So you end up in a situation where everybody's just constantly doubling down on whatever terrible idea they've had over and over, because they don't want to be the ones who turn around and go, actually, we've got to try and solve this problem, because they've got this concern, which comes back to trust. If we give them an inch, they'll take a mile.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I think, it would be nice to have some sort of rule, like you say, around sort of how many minutes maybe players could play, but I just can't see anyone agreeing to it, because, they'll think, well, why should we limit ours? Yeah, and that's where it sort of comes to. And I think, to be fair, football clubs are sort of getting better and better at looking after players. And, I think you know, because they know that, you know, it's a long season. But I think even international football, it's like, well, we've only got him a week. So it's almost like they don't care. There's the Arsene Wenger quote, isn't it, where you said, you know, you give away your portion and it comes back, you know, sort of bashed up and no petrol and things like that. And it does feel like that. I mean, that's what Pep Guardiola must feel like with Ferran Torres at the moment, that, you know, they've just handed over a prized asset. Yeah, he's not playing every week, but he's still an expensive asset over to Spain, and they've basically just run him in the ground and then, you know, shoved him back and said, oh, there you are, you deal with that. And, you know, it isn't right on the footballers, and I think the footballers, you know, in a tough position, because, you know, like you said before, or someone said before, they do enjoy playing international football. It's a source of pride for them. You know, they're not all like Adam Smith. Do you know what I mean? A lot of them are into it, really, and for them, you know. So I don't think it's fair sometimes when fans say, oh, they should just retire, do you know what I mean? Or we should just make them, you know, retire. You know, it's not going to sort of work like that. You know, they've got a lot of pride, but that pride is taken advantage of, I think, a little bit, really. And also, you know, I think there's times where you think, well, I don't want to say, you know, won't play or it won't go because it won't sort of get in the squad next time and things like that. And it feels like, you know, they've almost sort of got a gun to the head sometimes that they sort of have to get on with it. And as I say, it just doesn't sit right with me at all.
We're not far away, Belinda, from some people starting to talk about the amount of money that they earn and also act as though they don't earn a living. I think that will happen. I'd expect that to come out across some form of talk radio in the next few weeks. We can probably pick the pundits, to be honest, with like a sweep. It will decide that they're going to go heavy on it. Never did them any harm, etc., etc. That's the bit where the players go on. What?
I was just laughing. It's always the ones who can't walk anymore, isn't it?
Yeah. That's the point at which the players will need protecting, because I do think that this is a front that is going to open up. I think Courtois made the first move, and I think that everyone will feel it's in their interests to amplify the opposition to this, especially people who pay money for football for huge contracts, to say, no, we cannot afford for the goose to lay the golden eggs to lay slightly fewer eggs. Belinda.
Yeah, no, it's the issue with football, isn't it? Everything's sort of tribal and everything sort of gets into just, you know, meaningless discussions and arguments about things, and the actual issue at hand sort of gets lost. Sorry, I lost my train of thought.
It's okay. It's one where, Adam, where I think that, I think that the next phase of this is that there is going to be demonstrable people making some sort of point, because it grabs attention and it'll get a few clicks here and there, and that's what's coming next.
Yeah, and I think it has to be, really, because I just don't see what else the solution is, really, because, you know, as I touched on before, FIFA and UEFA, and to be fair, you know, all of the other sort of governing bodies like CONMEBOL, etc., have proven time and again that they do not care about the players, and they do, you know, all they're interested in is their own self-interest. Why are we playing a World Cup in Qatar in December? That's got nothing to do with the players. That is entirely down to FIFA's own best interests and their own money making, etc., right? And trying to please entirely the wrong people. So it has to get to the point where the players are going to have to say, we've got to start trying to make a point here, because nobody's listening. So it's going to have to be basically on them that do it.
When they make that point, Adam, my thing was, when they make that point, what will happen is lots of people will say, but you earn 300 grand a week.
Of course, but yeah, look, players earn stupid amounts of money. If you don't accept that, don't watch football. The second you start thinking about how much money players earn, your head's going to go. Once you go down that road, you're in Weirdoville, and there's no coming back from it, because it's crazy. You know, we're talking about Ronaldo on £500,000 a week. £500,000 a week? I probably won't earn £500,000 in my lifetime. He's on it a week. You can't think of that. And the people who are going to say that are kind of, they're conflating two, I've used that word twice now, I'm getting excited about it, but they're conflating two different arguments. That's not the conversation. The conversation is about their health. And believe it or not, as far as I'm aware, earning £500,000 a week or 20, you know, £50,000 a week or £10,000 a week doesn't mean that you are invincible in terms of your health. The amount of money somebody earns is irrelevant to what they're being able to put their body through. Irrelevant.
Ian McPhee's made the point, we schedule the international break for 4 weeks at the end of the season, they play all the matches. Then the issue is that different confederations play the games that have seasons that run at different times. There is no standardisation across the season. And also why people don't like that is the idea that you don't get to spread the games out, which means some players will be injured and some players won't be, which is quietly ironic, Ian, given what's happened to Manchester City's Fernand Torres. Do some other comments before we go into the mini break. Stevie Ray says, up the Reds from Long Island. Hope we can come back to Carragher's Pub for a show in New York soon. So do we, Stevie. But ultimately, I think it's still going to remain difficult to get in and out of the United States. If you want to have a word, write to your local congressman. Mike McCumsky asks if Jota is out. Is Jota out? Mike says. Mike, listen to the second part of the show where we're going to tell you that he's not. He's trained with the players. All's absolutely fine. Simon Thomas is moving house tomorrow. He could do with Anfield rap encouragement. He's knee deep in boxes, John. Have you got any tips for Simon at this, frankly, very difficult time?
Nothing worse, but tour player is your friend. TheAnfieldRap.com/subscribe with all the content that you want to get you through.
There's a lot to listen to on there, isn't there, John?
Yeah, there is a heck of a lot.
Is there like some sort of ASMR thing where we do soothing noises for house movers? Have we not reached that level yet?
Someone write that down. Adam Smith could do that. I think he's got a nice built studio there for it. Yeah. Next thing for Adam.
Everything will be fine. Everything will be fine. It will all get into the van. Paul asks if Manny is available. Do we know? Paul, you put the fear of God into me. Is the talk he might not be available? Where's that come from? Jack Mather writes, he wants to say the NBA has a growing regular season problem with star players sent out for rest, but he's done it as two messages, and the way the second one's ended, it looks like the NBA has a growl, which I'm sure they absolutely very much do. What else do we have going all the way through here? Have you lads heard the Fabinho quotes on Rafinha? Belinda, you're good at transfers. Have you heard the Fabinho quotes on Rafinha?
Yeah, he's just said something like that he heard that, you know, maybe Rafinha was going to move in the summer and he thought Liverpool would be interested, and I think that's the extent of it. And I think Deco has come out as his Rafinha's agent talking about it, and Deco was part of the team who was involved in the Liverpool transfer with Fabinho. So I don't know, they're just talking.
Does Deco make things happen? Is Deco a person who makes things happen, Belinda?
On and off the pitch?
Well, I like to believe so, just for like my childhood and what he did on the pitch. Yeah. I would like to believe he's still in a realm where he's making things happen in football. So
can't keep him out of the action.
He has a lovely face, an absolutely lovely face. Rafinha can't be bothered with him, doesn't score enough goals. Richard Poynter, what about if players were not paid for playing for the country, like Mbappe said? Surely their health would be more important. Most players do actually donate a lot of the money that they get from international football, frankly. They just don't talk about it very much and no one publicises it to go from there. Daniel Middleman slanders Jake Humphrey. With a lot of Jake Humphrey chat on Talking Reds this morning, John. We took the Twitter thread thing about him that said he texted into Radio 1 to say keep the bangers coming. and we went from there with that. What else do we have? Yeah, Anna Roberts says the 6 years of Klopp pod was great. It was indeed. She almost didn't listen because what else is there to say? It turns out a lot. If you haven't listened, you should. And what we do with this, then this goes out to the podcast as well. So in a minute, I'm going to stop talking and then people will get the inserts that go out to the podcast. What two of them are about this week is the LFC Foundation. And the other thing also has, is it Harriet?
I spoke to Mona.
John speaking to Mona about all of the nutritionist work that she's done at Liverpool and her book as well. How was Mona?
Yeah, she was lovely. Really, really nice. I said I was from the Anfield Rap and she got very excited.
Did she?
Yeah. She went, oh, brilliant. I was like, I bet you didn't do that for Paul Ghost.
Which is a real shame. I was excited to see Paul Ghost.
I was pleased to see Paul Ghost. I'm sure Mona was as
did
well.
Did you learn anything from Mona?
A little bit, yeah. I asked her, it's coming up, but I asked her about...
Not for the live people, John. I'm going to encourage the live people to chase it back around.
Absolutely. But basically, I said, we play five-a-side at 6 o'clock after work, and how would she structure my day food-wise? And she told me.
Did she tell you?
Yeah.
Did she say, eat a great big lasagna an hour before kickoff like Jordan once did?
No, it's the opposite of what she said.
Well, hey, Jordan, we live and learn.
I didn't tell her about Jordan throwing up on the side of the pitch, but now wish I had.
Yeah. I say you live and learn. He probably didn't need Mona to tell them that was a bad thing. So all of those inserts are available if you listen to this as a podcast. They're going to start now, and then we'll be straight back round. So they've started now. I hope you're enjoying Tour Live. It's Neil. Just to introduce those inserts for you. Coming up, we've got the LFC Foundation CEO, Matt Parrish, on the Foundation Impact Report. Also, we've got Forbes stuff from Red Neighbours on the LFC Foundation Impact Report as well. And then there will be Mona Nema on her book, A Taste of the Liverpool Way. John, as you know, has spoken to Mona. So all of that is to come. We'll run them into one another. So it'll be Matt, then it'll be Forbes, then it'll be Mona, and then it'll be back to me.
Hello, it's Harriet Pryor for the Anfield Wrap, and we are at Anfield for the launch of the Impact Report for the LFC Foundation. And I am joined by Matt Parrish now. And, you know, it's really great. I was just saying to you before, as a fan, you don't maybe know all the work that you do, so it's really good that you're able to quantify it and put into numbers. So how important is it that you've actually managed to come out with this report and you can actually see in figures what the work that you're doing?
No, it's hugely important. I think we've always counted numbers, as it were, how many people we work with. We wanted to make sure firstly that was accurate, but we also wanted to make sure that there was a deeper meaning to what we were doing. So the things that sort of leap out to me from the report are that, which demonstrates the need and why we have to do what we do, is that over 75% of our participants come from top 20% most deprived wards in the UK, not just in Liverpool. They are in Liverpool, but not just from... And I think it's over 50% come from the top 10% most deprived wards. So it shows that we're... It helps to show that we're doing our work in the right areas. But it's also important to check that, you know, satisfaction, how the participants feel that they benefit from the programme. So again, things like... I think the figures, over 85% said it, they felt it improved their... mental health and well-being, and I think 86-87% their physical health. So we want to move away from just talking about numbers. I think ultimately and most significantly for me, we fundraise, we get grants, we get commissioned, fans donate to us via the Legends Games and other activities. It's important that we spend that money in the right way and we use the resources properly, and this helps us ensure that we do that.
Yeah, you spoke about moving away from numbers there. I guess you're saying, so you helped over 50,000 people, and that's obviously incredible. But I guess you personally get to meet some of the individuals that it's actually changing their lives and making a real difference in their life. So how is that for you to actually be able to talk to these people one-on-one and realise that 50,000 people is making such a big difference in the community?
No, it's massive. And I think I said it in the presentation. I may have said this on the Anfield Wrap before, so I'm getting a bit boring in my old age. But... or perhaps I've always been boring, but I've talked about the fact that when I first came here, people talked about LFC Foundation, and we sort of heard of you, and you sound the point about a fan. Oh, don't you do loads of work overseas and nothing at home? And at the time, we weren't doing much overseas, and we weren't doing enough here. We are doing more here now. We can always do more. We are starting to look overseas. Here's our home, but we're the charity of a global football club, so we should be doing work overseas as well. We started doing that. But I think that point, to your point about the difference, making a real difference... There was an employability programme that we ran here that finished 2 weeks ago. Eight young people completed it. All of them have got jobs. The club are supporting, so the club guarantee an interview to all young people that come for our employability programme, because they're a big employer in this area. So where can we, as the foundation, step in and make a difference? We can't do everything, but children, young people, working with fans group like Spirit of Shankly, with mental health projects. So where can we make the best impact rather than trying to do everything and doing it not so well or doing it okay? Focus on what we can do well. And that's why the impact report is important, to help us demonstrate and reassure ourselves that we're working in the right areas, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you spoke about the blueprint of the city and the identity that it does have, and the fact that it is such a caring city and a place where you visit, you feel like instantly you're at home. And for you to sort of try and spread that work globally, do you think that blueprint of the city impacts all the work that you do?
Oh, massively. I was really fortunate soon after I started in mid-2019 to go on the club's pre-season tour. So the great thing Liverpool does when it goes on pre-season tour, we haven't done it for a while, obviously, the club goes, you know, so the men's and women's team went together. The foundation was there. The, you know, the marketing, everything was there to spread the word of LFC and run events. And there was people driving 12 hours to come and see us work on a holiday football court, on a football call. So they must have been underwhelmed when they got to see me. But the fact that, and a lot of those fans have never been to Anfield, but they, and then at the fan events in the evening, they were singing, you know, Jamie Webster songs, and as though they were, you know, they are passionately connected to this club, you know, so that it's important for us to try and do some work with those fans. What we've done in the last couple of years is actually worked on pulling them together. There, lots of the OLSCs, the official Liverpool sports clubs, are doing unbelievable work already in their community. So what we've done is try to harness that and to publicise it. So the more of that we can do, the better. I don't think we should be ashamed of that, as I said, the fact that we are the charity of that global club. But there is a lot of, you know, Liverpool City Region is the most deprived city region in the UK. Therefore, I think we have such a responsibility to be there first and then expand out. And that's sort of the model we've taken. Let's get it right here and then expand out.
Yeah, just a couple more things. You spoke about the players and the men's and the women's team and the coach all going together. Is it something that the players from both teams and also in the academy and stuff, is it something they're keen to get involved in? Do they take an interest in it and do they want to help and support your work?
Yeah, definitely. And I think the COVID period and lockdown and, you know, needing to protect the player group, which makes sense, men's and women's, has made that more challenging. But almost from day one, we got them involved in, with Heather, I and members of the team, we were having meetings on a weekly basis and we were getting players doing Zoom calls, teams called, calling an isolated fan, calling one of the employability participants. But we do, and when we get, I always say, the simple answer to that is Jürgen is our ambassador. So you can't have sort of higher, you know, endorsement than that. And I think what that does, it ripples down amongst the players. We work with James Milner, we work with Trent, talking to Thiago, James, you know, Jordan Henderson, in my opinion, he's a footballer, he's a great footballer, but he stood up at a time when, you know, not everyone was standing up, and he corralled and pulled people together. And he's a captain in every sense of the word. So, and that filters down to us. They, you know, little one retweet or send on social media from them about our programmes is massive. Exactly. And the endorsement we get from them in terms of supporting programmes. And interesting that the local lads, like Curtis, for instance, is an ambassador for the Game On programme we run with Nike. And for young people in Liverpool, in Toxteth, to know that Curtis supports it just gives it that little extra stardust, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, definitely. I think final thing, you focus a lot on young people and the working with younger families and people from deprived areas. Why is it really important that you try and target individuals at that age moving forward in their lives? Is it simply because you want to be able to start them off on the right path that maybe they haven't been offered through their circumstances?
Yeah, I think you just answered the question there. Yeah, basically, I think if we can get in early and put in an intervention that makes a significant impact at an earlier age, more chance of that happening. That's not to say that we can't have impact with older groups. So the work we're doing with Spirit of Shankly around, you know, trying to sort of reduce the horrific number of male suicides, adult suicides, the work that the Red Neighbours team do week in week, you know, genuinely, I'd encourage you to go down every Monday and Friday afternoon at Anfield Sports. There can be up to 90 guys running around playing walking football. And the walking netball, which is predominantly women, but that it's a sports session, but it's also a social session. So that's prolonging lives. You know, that's making connections for people that might not have been there before. So, and they were hammering Forbes every week. Well, why is it not on? Why is it not on during lockdown? So I think that sort of full gambit. Yes, our main focus might be children, and young people, but that and families. But that, as you said, is exactly because that's we think we can have the most impact there, and perhaps get that intervention in early enough to make a longer-term sustainable change.
Yeah, finally, looking ahead to the next 12 months, what do you hope you've achieved maybe at this event the same time next year?
Good question. I think we're working, if I'm honest, we work significantly in 3/4 of the boroughs of the Liverpool City region. We'd like to have meaningful programmes running in all 6. We're looking to develop our work overseas and working with our partners Right to Play, be working in at least one more country at the moment. We've got an established programme in Thailand, and I think hopefully generate more funding to support more people.
Thank you so much for having us today, and thank you for the work that you do. It's been really great to hear about it.
Brilliant, thank you.
Thank you. And I am now joined by Forbes Duff from Red Neighbours. So I think for people that maybe know more about the foundation in a more wider context but don't know specifically about Red Neighbours, could you just tell us a little bit more about the work that you specifically do at Red Neighbours and how it's sort of individual but also works together with the LFC Foundation?
The Red Neighbours programme has 4 areas of work. So that is food poverty and education, supporting the elderly, encouraging people to be physically more active, and also memorable experiences for young people, which is mainly the schools in and around Anfield and Kirby. So we try to focus on those 4 areas, mainly delivered in Anfield. We also delivered some of those activities in Kirby, and we work hand in hand with the foundation because there's a crossover of areas such as food and also working with the elderly or encouraging people to be physically more active. So it's about the club really coming together, Red Neighbours and Foundation, to then help the community which we live in.
Yeah, and I think obviously during the pandemic it was really hard for you because you had a lot of events and programmes that you couldn't put on due to the circumstances and the lockdowns. How is it now that we're opening up again? Are you able to start opening these programmes again and see the impact that it's making?
Yeah, it's fantastic to the world to reopen. I think everyone had challenges in lockdown. Everyone had struggles. COVID-19 is still here, although we're obviously learning to live with it, with people being vaccinated and people being more aware of their own presence and what's around them. So I feel that the lockdown was incredibly tough, and as a football club, Red Neighbours and Foundation, we tried to focus on three areas, that being food, social isolation and supporting our NHS and key workers, and I think we've done that. I think we stepped up to the plate and we tried to help those that were the most vulnerable. And then as we come out of lockdown and as we come into where we are today, it's fantastic to be able to welcome people back to Anfield, run our events such as walking football, walking netball. Obviously Christmas will be upon us soon, where we're hoping to host a number of events either at Anfield or within the local area, and sort of reconnect with people, because ultimately it's people that matter, and that's what we are trying to do, reconnect with people, support people and help those within our community as much as we can.
Yeah, and you work specifically within the L4 region. Why was that sort of a choice for you guys to work specifically there and to focus on that region and helping people in that area?
I think around about 4 years ago, we were asked to do a little bit of research into how can we as a football club help those. And obviously Anfield's a beacon, it's a pillar, it's an iconic building, everyone knows of Anfield. And we wanted to really impact the areas around that. So looking at the postcodes at L4, L5 and L6, and then most recently we've then moved to working Kirby, where the first team's complex is. And we really wanted to impact on the local people. So after a period of around about 6 months of research, there was lots of needs. And we decided to focus on four that we know that we can make an impact and make a difference. And that's what we did. And that's what we've tried to do. And we'll continue to do that, trying to affect Anfield and those local people, local residents and local school children as much as we can.
Yeah, definitely. And I think as a fan, and I think as a fan of football and of the club, it makes you feel even more connected when you sort of hear about these things. So if you were just could speak to fans, what would you sort of recommend that they share it with people, or how they can personally help? Because I think a lot of individuals maybe don't know what they can do to make a difference.
Yeah, I think there's a number of ways. If you're a Liverpool fan and you want to promote the great work that goes on within the community, then obviously social media is such a massive platform where a lot of people live their lives on. We're all socially connected online, but maybe not in person. So if you've got different social media accounts, if it's Twitter or Instagram, if you can follow and push those messages out that the LFC Foundation or Red Neighbours are pushing out, to then help that. And then also talk to people. You know, if you don't know what the foundation does or what Red Neighbours does, have a look online, find out a bit more, but then tell your friends, tell your family. If you go to the game, maybe a common thing to chat about, oh, did you know Liverpool are doing this in the community or doing that in the community, and sort of help that positive message get out. Because I firmly believe that as a fan, if the campaign is real and the campaign affects you, then there's no one better than Liverpool fans to then get behind that. If it's fundraising, if it's awareness, if it's looking out for each other, then Liverpool fans are, for me, number one at doing that, and the best there is.
Yeah, definitely. I think Liverpool's always worked the community, and the club has always known that that's really important. But have you seen a remarkable step up in the last few years since you've been here and you've been working at it, that there's really more of an effort now being made within the local community and the work that you're doing?
Yes, definitely more united front. And I think that what happens is when there's fundraising campaigns or there's an appeal and there's Liverpool fans who are promoting it, then it does impact. We look at COVID when it hit, and the whole world shut down almost, and we still had very vulnerable people in the community with no access to food. We were able to then to generate £320,000 to go to the North Liverpool Food Bank to allow them to get emergency food to people in need, but then also support the community pantry programme, which then allows affordable food, fresh bread, fresh milk, fresh fruit and veg, to be able to be affordable at prices that people can afford, and also to support local businesses. We look at people like Homebaked that are just in the shadow of the ground, that are putting money back into local people, a local business trying to support people who also do great food and drinks as well. And I think it's that united approach, almost like an alliance really, of everyone coming together to give back to the community.
Yeah, and finally, you mentioned the community there. Obviously, this is definitely an issues that transcend football and rivalries and everything like that. Do you try and work actively with other clubs in the area and other people in the area that maybe aren't Reds fans but just all want to have a united effort towards making a change?
Yeah, we do. So, obviously, you've got Everton Football Club and you've got Tranmere Rovers as well. And we have collaboratively worked with them on different projects, different things. I think one thing that has brought us all together is the campaign to help food poverty. So Everton do a lot in that world, Tranmere do a lot as well, and that's somewhere we've come together. So it's almost like bringing the biggest gangs in the city together to help each other, and that's where Liverpool Football Club and Everton Football Club can have a massive impact working together. And we do that, but I do feel that as we step forward, it's something that both clubs will grasp, because ultimately it's helping our communities and helping local people.
Yeah, and finally, if anyone that's maybe listened to any of the programmes or knows about anything you do but doesn't know how to get involved, what's the starting point for them? How, if they want to play walking netball or do anything like that, where do they go and how do they get involved?
Yeah, so there's a couple of options there. So if you have Twitter, you can go on the Red Neighbours Twitter account, drop us a message, or you can post and we'll get back to you. Other option is to go to the go into Google, just type in LFC Foundation, go on the top tab, contact us, and drop us an email. If it's in relation to Foundation or Red Neighbours, just pop an email in with your details and one of the team will get back to you, and we'd love your involvement, even if it's just from an online point of view of promoting the message that we do and encouraging people to get involved and support the great club that we all love.
Great, thank you so much for your time. Thank you.
It's John Gibbons and I'm in the Anfield Superstore. Very busy it is as well, but I'm not here for shopping today. I'm here because Mona Nema is with me. She's the LFC's Head of Nutrition and she has a beautiful looking book out. So Mona, thanks so much for some time today.
Thank you for coming here. Lovely to meet you.
So I guess the obvious first question, if you don't mind, is why you've decided to do a book.
Well, it was not only me, it was us. And it started in 2016. It was a lovely, unique group of people, including Jürgen, my god, and Billy Hogan was there. And we were just randomly chatting about nutrition and what is possible in nutrition and how wide this nutrition field can be. And this book idea came up. And this book idea was parked till like last year in spring in the drawer, and it came back on the agenda, and there was such a beautiful drive, such a beautiful team effort, and here we go. Life and in colour, our book.
It's fantastic. You know, you mentioned there, you know, it was a team of people who wanted sort of the idea, and Jürgen being one of them. Jürgen is a huge advocate of what you do. He called you in this book his most important signing. He seems someone who values intelligence and values ideas, and that must be so wonderful to work with.
Oh, it's fantastic, and I think how he leads the team, he's such a wonderful leader, such a fantastic boss, so such an amazing person, isn't he? And it's really, really enjoyable to work with him and for him, because you have the ability to actually put creativity in it, innovation in it, to move projects forward, and you have his full support, and that's just incredible.
So when you came to Liverpool, it must have been a big sort of jump for you to move to sort of another country, but you came on board, you know, you're still here, so you must be enjoying it. Was there any sort of differences from coming over to England to work? Because obviously squads are international now, but are there differences in terms of, you know, how people are in terms of, and how they view nutrition?
It was fantastic when I've arrived here, because I've immediately realised that I was already like a really good food knowledge and like nutrition knowledge given. So I had a really good starting point to extend and like put more innovation in it, and also like create new strategies, new approaches and all these bits. And I think we all know how lovely and warm the city is, how lovely the fans are. And I always felt from the first moment I'm very, very welcome.
Fantastic. Joe Gomez is in the book and he talks about how much you've helped him. Is he one of the ones who asks you more questions than others, do you think? Because he says, you know, he's a young guy when he came to Liverpool and still learning. And I guess, you know, we forget sort of how young a lot of these players are, really, because we look up to them and we idolise them as fans. But, you know, he admits in the book that he was an 18-year-old kid, and remember my diet when I was 18 was terrible.
So we have players of all age groups, and we have a kind of an open door policy, and I think that works pretty well. So I can imagine if you have to book your appointment at a nutritionist and then it doesn't really fit into your day. So what we do, we don't really do proper consultation. It all happens in between the doors. Everyone is connected. So, and it's, I think that helps a lot, that no one has like fear to say, can I ask this, or is that a bit strange, or is that really what should happen, or can I have this, or can I not have that? So we try to make it as easy and as sympathetic as possible for the players, and also how we try to deliver knowledge and also education, that it's not like this lifted finger, like, you only have to eat whole grain pasta or whatever. So we try to make it like really interesting, where they also have the ability to make decisions and actually to enjoy your nutrition.
Yeah. What the book gets across is that nutrition isn't just for professional athletes, and it's important for all of us, and the better, obviously, we look after ourselves, you know, the better we'll be. And I think sometimes, you know, even the word nutritionist maybe, you know, makes us think of, you know, only for certain people. But this book, you know, I've just sort of had a read now, waiting to speak to you, and the information feels very accessible. And I guess that you've pitched it, well, this is going to be useful for anyone.
Yeah, so that was one of our main targets, to create a book what is for every age group, so for kids, for adults, and every fan of every age. So that was the one thing. But we also wanted to create something what inspires, enables, empowers, like motivates people to think about nutrition and actually gain knowledge about nutrition as well. And it was very important to us as well to have a lot of infographics and pictures in there where all sorts of age groups can understand and actually learn just visualizing things. And yeah, I hope we have managed it quite well to get a lot of people to feel motivated around that.
You mentioned they're young people, and I think, you know, we talked about young footballers, but I guess for, you know, the earlier we can start thinking about these things, the better, really. And I think, you know, when I was younger, I, you know, didn't really think maybe too much about what to sort of putting in my body. But the older you get, the sort of more you realise you have to. And I think that, you know, if that could be sort of in, not just in younger footballers, but in young people in this city, it can only be a good thing.
So we always talk about performance, isn't it? But everyone is performing. So yeah. You go to school and you have to write an exam. We all go to work and we have big meetings. Or even if you just exercise, you go for footy training. Everywhere is performance involved. So you want to perform well. And there's nothing more satisfying if you have like the energy levels to just feel like energized and happy to do it.
Yeah. Are you proud of what you've achieved here at Liverpool? Because you've been here a number of years now. We've talked about that. Liverpool has been very successful since you've been here. And Jürgen always stresses it's a team effort and everyone's sort of involved. So you must be proud of your time here, but also what the club's achieved while you've been here.
Well, it's the most wonderful thing when you can win something together. And I think together is like a beautiful word. Pep is using that word on the side bench when the formation of the squad is not perfect, all of it. And then he shouts, together! And I think this togetherness like helps so massively to create atmosphere and also to look after each other, to respect each other, to cooperate with like all and communicate with all different departments. And together, we can do so much more, and I think that's under Jürgen's philosophy very, very special.
Can I ask a little bit more about your role on match day then, and what you sort of, you know, because, you know, I guess it's important before and after in terms of nutrition as well.
Yeah, so we are in charge around everything around food and drinks. So we stay with the team the night before. We chaperone all like the food menus, buffet, everything. We have our own chefs there, live cooking stations to empower around portion sizes and all these bits. And then in the stadium, I'm more or less in and out, observing a bit. Substitutions are getting made. International players might be flying back from Brazil, still like suffering under a little jet lag, so a little tiny bit more at halftime might be necessary. So I could not even describe a proper routine, because it's like in and out and just trying to make it the right.
Do you still get to enjoy the games? So when Mo Salah scores an amazing goal like he did against Manchester City, do you still get to enjoy it, or is your head still too much everywhere with work?
I love to be organized and also like being ready, because there's sometimes just split seconds. I'm like, I need this now. And yeah. So there will just be no time. So focus a lot on that and try to help the team as much as I can.
Maybe last question. You said before that we're all performers, and, you know, with the focus on marginal gains, the Anfield Wrap, we play football on a Wednesday night at 6 o'clock. Sometimes it's after a long day in work, you're tired, it's difficult to know when to eat. So if I want to get ahead of my teammates next Wednesday, what would you encourage me to do in terms of, you know, getting my food right, getting my nutrition right, so I'll make sure that I'm scoring lots of goals next week?
So you would have two options. So either you have a late breakfast around 10 and then like a late lunch between 2 and 3, to be ready for 6 o'clock, or you have like your normal breakfast and then you have your lunch and you have a snack between 2 and 3. So we call this a meal watch. And so the meal watch actually guides us towards how, when the best last fueling point is before kickoff time. So that will be my recommendation on that.
There we are. Marginal gains all over the place here. Mona, thank you so much for the time. The book, A Taste of the Liverpool Way, it's available obviously here in the club shop and I'm sure online as well. Mona, best of luck with it. Really nice to meet you.
Lovely to meet you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much to all of them, to Matt, to Forbes and to Mona for taking the time out to speak to us about all of that. Let's get back over now to see what's happening back on Tour Live. And now we're straight back round. It's Neil Atkinson with John Gibbons, Adam Smith and Belinda Barty to talk and look ahead to Liverpool's upcoming game against Watford. And Belinda, it's a strange one, this, in that there's a lot of, I'm sure we would probably all have liked Zisco to still be the manager of Watford. It wasn't going well for him. They were really badly structured. They were giving away an unbelievable amount of chances. They let slip 2.52 expected goals via StatsBomb to Newcastle United, of all people, a few weeks back. This was not a team that was defending at all well. They brought Claudio Ranieri in. I'm sure we're all concerned about a bit of new manager bounce, but my thing about new manager bounce is the manager needs to have had at least some time to work with the players. A lot of them will have been off on international duty, and I suspect he'll be working out what new manager bounce looks like before this one.
To be fair, like, I was trying to work out like how many of their players actually go to international break, and yeah, will that new manager bounce come into effect? I mean, apart from Saul, obviously, I don't know the Watford squad too deep to work out the numbers, but yeah, there's a lot of things going into this game that feel like it will make it a bogey game and have a bogey result, you know, away from home 12:30, because our players have only just got back as well. Yeah. As we know, our Brazilians aren't even back, so. Maybe like the football gods will look down on us, and the fact that there's so many things pointing towards a bogey result will mean it's an easy 3-0. But yeah, let's hope.
Well, I think on that, John, I think that part of all of that, I actually think will help keep Liverpool honest. And also the fact that this is a ground and there aren't actually that many of them, certainly in front of a crowd, where last time Liverpool played on, they got beat. Like, the one thing I cannot see is Liverpool turning up with any degree of complacency. That's my main takeaway from this. In every single level, they know it's the first game of the weekend. They know they don't want to be handing advantages out to rivals. They know it's a new manager. They know it'll be a partisan crowd. But they also know the last time they went to Vicarage Road in front of a partisan crowd, they didn't just get beat, they got tonked.
Yeah, I think that's fair, Neil, and I think, you know, they'll be talking about that, and I'm sure there'll be a reminder of, you know, what can happen if they get the sort of tails up, what can happen if you know, as you say, the crowd get behind them, and what can happen if we give Sar far too much space, because that's what they did on that day, and he just sort of legged through everyone. So I think they'll be up for it. I think they'll be conscious as well, you know, as a team of, you know, that sort of City game, you know, last time, and not starting that, you know, brave enough, as Klopp said, and then sort of, you know, how he sort of finished the game as well. So they might be talking about that a little bit as well, in terms of like making sure we got the right approach from the off, really. But, you know, I think the new manager thing, you know, the Liverpool squad, you know, need to ignore sort of best they can, you know, I mean, obviously we sort of talk about it because you're thinking about how the game is going to go. But I think from a Liverpool point of view, yeah, it'll be all about sort of getting our attitude right, really, all about sort of, you know, as you say, looking at that game a couple of years ago and approaching it much, much differently. But also, you know, making sure that, you know, we're approaching ourselves in the right way and attacking it, because, you know, Watford will be there to be beaten. I think if you think, you know, the manager sort of lost his job, it's still sort of the same squad, you know, with the sort of same issues.
And they're very old, you know. Yeah, there's one of the things I discovered today, yeah, doing some research. There's a lot of lads who could play in this game who are in the 30s.
Yeah, and I don't think, look, I could be end up looking silly, but I don't think Ranieri is the kind of manager who's got that much bounce in him, really. I think he's a tactical manager. He's someone who's, you know, he's more going to analyse what they've got and find a better way for them to play. I think he's a good manager. Obviously, he's a Premier League winner, but I think he's a thinker, really. And I don't think he's one who's going to suddenly come in and tell them to be running a lot more and this and that, or sort of necessarily even looking to sort of show them up. I think he might have even written this one off, to be honest with you, and he'll be using it to sort of have a little bit of a look and then looking from there.
I think you should have a little bit of looks, very, very possible, Adam. The thing to say, though, is that Liverpool, they do have these strangenesses. I'm not quite sure on a few levels around the squad. In that, what I mean by that isn't, I'm not, it's the sort of game where I would like there to be some Fabinho. And that's my point. I'd like there to be Alisson Becker. I'm not, I'm not against Henderson at all playing A in the game, but also B at number six for a lot of games, including a lot of almost in a lot of inverted commas senses, bigger games than this. Like, for instance, you tell me Henderson's going to start at the base of the midfield going to Goodison, I'd be absolutely sanguine about it and think, yeah, he'll be fine there and that'll all come together quite nicely. My thing with this one is because they may look to sort of go the aerial route, look to go really, really direct, may well look to sort of turn us round and play into spaces a little bit. I would like there to be Fabinho and Alisson, and that's not me disparaging anyone who's going to come in for either of them or play in their positions.
I agree with you completely, but on the flip side of that, there is the fact that actually the fact that we're without Fabinho and the fact that we're without Alisson, and almost certainly it's going to end up being Kelleher starting, means that there is a little bit of a backs against the wall thing that the players might have to kind of think about, in a sort of, you know, look, we need to protect him. So they might be a bit more switched on in a defensive sense than maybe they would have been if Alisson was starting, if Fabinho was in the DM role. I think maybe that it sort of plays in our favour a little bit, and everybody's going to kind of, you know, work together to protect each other. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly the right word. Be galvanised and protect each other more than they would be doing if the main players were there. On the new manager bounce thing, I've said on wildcards that came out today that I did some research on new manager bounce, and it's not really a thing. About 30% of managers win their first game when they go in the middle of the season. But Andrew Beasley's released a piece today which basically says, apart from when Liverpool play them, in which case they normally win. So it's sort of, new manager bounce isn't real, but Liverpool do their best to get those managers bouncing, give them but Liverpool basically turn up with a bloody trampoline to help these fellas. So hopefully that also will, Klopp will be aware of that and work hard to stop it being a thing.
The nature of the international break, the nature of the fixture, and where we are for the season and against Watford, Belinda, the manager's got a bit of a selection headache, I actually think, in the middle of the park. And I mean, he's got a big decision to make, because he'll have Henderson at six, we can just sort of go with that. And then all of Keita, Chamberlain, Milner and Jones will feel like they should be starting this one for completely different reasons in a lot of ways, I think. But I think all four of them would be of the view that they should be in there to start this one, especially with Atletico Madrid also coming up on Tuesday.
Yeah, I think that between Jones and Keita, you have to assess who's come back like fresher from internationals, things like that. Jones obviously playing, you know, under 21 football, so I don't know how... I assume that's equally as intensive as, like, you know, senior international football. So I think you've just got to manage between them, like, you know, who of them two can come in. And then Milner and Ox, yeah, you assume Trent can go into right back. So you need Milner probably in this game in midfield. Just, again, maybe some leadership in that midfield. You're missing Fabinho. Henderson's going to be, then I don't know if he's got the legs. Okay, he's got probably got the legs, because... at the moment, Ox is looking like he's running like a headless chicken, even if he's got the legs. So yeah, definitely selection it. But yeah, I think the two keys are Jones and Keita, because you've got to look ahead to Atletico and then United after. So yeah.
That is, I mean, both of those are on the horizon, John. And for me, that's Scott McCauley's put there. If Ox doesn't start this game, can't see where he gets his next league start. I mean, that's a pretty valid point, frankly. And but then the flip side of that is Milner will probably have these sorts of games with a big red ring around it in this calendar, coming back off international breaks himself, thinking, well, I'd like some of them in midfield as well, please.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, you can talk about who's going where on international, but there is quite a few of them who haven't travelled at all. Firmino is another one, of course. He doesn't sort of get picked, but is sort of fit. And Milner and Chamberlain. So he will be tempted to use both of them, but he might sort of, you know, think of sort of holding back. I'll be surprised if Keita starts, just because he's played three games in the international break, sort of. So it's quite a sort of heavy workload for him. So I'd be sort of surprised. So Curtis Jones is an interesting one in that he leaves internationals early because of a bit of an injury, but then apparently he's okay. So I think it's an injury he took, and they were actually a bit more sensible with him than the Spanish were for Ferran Torres. But I think, you know, he looks like he's sort of going to be okay, but they might just sort of hold him back a little bit. So, yeah, I agree with Scott. I think, you know, or whoever it was, sorry, Yeah, well, Scott, sorry, Scott McCauley. I've got confused by another Scott jumping in, making it a Scott fest in the comments. That I think you know, he probably will sort of go for him on this one, and then maybe look for someone like Curtis Jones or a Keita as a swap, really, and someone who could sort of come in for them and give him sort of half an hour in this one. But they'll have their eye on Atletico as well.
I think this is one, I'll come back to you on it, John, where I think it is, there's almost, as I say, the options are interesting. It's the idea that he's got options. People will feel as though he doesn't, but he very much does for this Watford away game. You know, even with a couple, with one absence and two injuries in the middle of the park, he's still got five to choose from. And because we expect Henderson starts at six, it's two from four.
Yeah, and Curtis Jones's versatility gives him options more as well. So I think last year you'd be thinking, well, you know, you have to play Milner because, you know, you'd only want one of Jones, Chamberlain and Keita, you know, in that team, really. And if it was two of them, then you'd be sort of a bit too attacking for an away. But Curtis's newfound maturity, and Curtis is a bit, you know, he's played six this season, hasn't he? Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily be throwing him in six in this one, but he has played that more Wijnaldum role sort of really successfully over the last sort of 6 months, you know, carrying over the two seasons. And so I think the fact that he is doing that would you know, give you that option. I think Keita as well, to be fair, has done some decent work a little bit deeper in this game as well. So I think you can, you know, you've got an option to leave Milner out of this one and wait for him for Tuesday if you wanted to. But I do think you'll pick Milner.
In the comments there, Sanchez, hi, Sanchez says that Watford have got a few injuries as well. Watford doesn't have a few injuries. Watford have an unbelievable injury list, but they also have a mad squad list where the full of lads that you've never heard of before who can just appear at the drop of a hat. They've lost Dini, Atibu, Gray, Cabaselli won't be available for them. Quina won't be available for them. Sirialta, who's been playing centre-half for them, won't be available for them. In goal will be Ben Foster. He is 40. Cathcart will play. He is 33. Kuka will probably play. He is 34 going on 35. This is a side that is... Moussa Sissoko, you forget, 32. This is a side of pretty old footballers.
Quite interesting Dennis chat. You know, he's made the most fouls in the league this season.
Has he?
What's he up to?
I love it when that happens. There was a period of time in about, there was a long run where year after year in the early 2000s, the most fouled and the player who had committed the most fouls in the league at the same time as Kevin Davies.
He's just running into fouls.
Just running into people and appealing, and the referee's got to give it one way or the other.
Yeah.
And that's the way in which it would work.
Yeah, Dennis has got the most yellow cards as well, so his fouls are... You know, he's not messing around with them either.
Significant fouls.
Yeah. Not just niggles.
He's absolutely fouling properly. I am, therefore, very much of the view, Belinda, this is a game Liverpool have to win. If you rank the games at the start of the season, you know, 1 to 38, most difficulty to least difficulty, we're talking here about a game that's 32 downwards, if we all need to be honest about it. It might be a bit of a slog. They'll be determined to show for the new manager, but they've got some aging legs in there, and Liverpool, this really is a game that Liverpool should be winning.
100%, yeah, there's no room for error, or there is room for error, but it's not that much of error. And I think something I worked out a few years ago is these Champions League group games, they're actually the ones that feel like a bit of a night off. Like, you can afford to drop points in some of the group games.
Divock Origi will start in Madrid. That's my current prediction, that Divock Origi will start in Madrid. For this reason that you're saying, because it's fine to get a draw in Madrid. You go and play Madrid, you can get a draw, so you put Divock up front for an hour, he runs around, he occupies defenders, he runs into people, does a little bit of Emmanuel Denis work, he does all of that. And then, so that's your point, isn't it? You can actually afford to draw or lose in Madrid, but you've got to beat Watford.
Exactly. The points count more in the league at this stage where we're at now. So yeah, I think that... especially with sort of how we didn't get the big wins against either Chelsea or City at home, they could potentially look like, you know, massive points dropped in terms of the context of winning the league, right? So you can't afford any more, just like Brentford's, you need to actually come out now and start. But this is actually a good opportunity to have a good run of form. We've got three massive games now. Two of the three games where, if you go back to just before the pandemic all kicked off, there was two awful results against Atletico and Watford. This group of players were involved in those results. This is now an opportunity to say, well, look, show that, you know, we've got through this blip now. This is a chance now, we're going to kickstart and let this be the run of a good patch of form going into the Christmas.
What do you think you'll do then on selection, just very quickly, Belinda? What do you expect from the midfield? What are you expecting from the front? I think it'll be the first choice back for Kelleher in goal. So Henderson plus two, who do you think the two will be? And which of Firmino and Jota do you think misses out?
I think Defoe, Milner will start, and I think he'll go Jones, just because I think he'll be fresher and he'll be, you know, you just don't want to take any risk with Keita going into the big games. And we're coming up back off the Guinea games, and then up front, Firmino, just because he'll have the internationals to work, we'll do training as well. So yeah,
Adam, what do you think?
Yeah, I think I generally agree with that. I don't know about Keita. I've got a long-standing theory that Keita doesn't fly well. And whenever he flies anywhere, whether it's to a Champions League match for us or off somewhere for Guinea, that he gets an injury quite soon after. Like, and it's mental because he's only got small legs compared to people who have to sit, you know, and he's probably, I imagine him, first class or whatever with loads of leg room. But there's something happens to Keita. So either he doesn't start or he starts and then is immediately injured, you know, during the match or something. So I think Firmino, Klopp seems to like playing the players who he's had a long time to work with. So when it's an international break and loads of the lads are sticking around, he tends to want to play those players in the game. So I'd be very surprised if the likes of Milner, Firmino, etc., who didn't go away on international duty, Matip, don't start the game. That's kind of, so my take is he'll go with the bare structure of the players he's been working with for the week, or the fortnight, I should say, and then kind of put other players around depending on how fit they seem to be coming back from international duty.
And you're expecting a Liverpool win?
Yes, I am. I think we can get quite caught up in the idea of all the new manager and all this and all that. Reality is they're rubbish and we really should be beating them. And we get a bit scared of these things. And obviously they're losing 3-0 to them their last time, but they're rubbish. And Claudio Ranieri I don't think he's a great manager. I think he's a decent manager, but I think he's going to take his time to really put a stamp on them. I still think they'll go down this season. So I'll put it this way. If we don't win, I'll be really annoyed for the rest of the weekend. And, you know, I know the lads don't like to annoy me.
And it's an early start. John, they should win. And what do you think he does in midfield and attack?
Yeah, I think the win, I think it'll go for me, you know. Someone top tip said he was looking sharp in the inside Anfield. The video is on YouTube, so that's really good news. So for me, you know, Salah, Mane, I think he'll go Henderson, Milner, and I think he'll pick Chamberlain. I think he'll pick Chamberlain and maybe hold Curtis Jones back. Obviously, Fabinho comes back for that Atletico game as well. I think he'll go with that. And then the back four, we think, sort of picks itself. And then obviously, it'll be Kelleher in goal, who we haven't mentioned as well, but it's a big game for Kelleher. But maybe I haven't mentioned him because we've got loads of confidence in him. Cork's finest. So I think that's what I go for. And yeah, I think they'll win. I think that, you know, I've been buoyed by this Watford injury news.
Craig Cathcart, John.
I was just going to say him. I watched him for the Green and White Army in the week, and not great, I'll be honest with you, at his age. You know, his best years are behind him. That's me being generous.
And they weren't that good. He's 33. Craig Cathcart, ladies and gentlemen, are you going to get a lot of it over the course of the weekend? Steve in the comments says, 1-0 Salah, horrible game, but job will be done. I think horrible game feels about right. I think there'll be a point at about 35 where we'll all be living with each other. And then there'll be a point at about 60 where we'll be wondering why we were also living with each other, because that is the experience at times of supporting Liverpool in games like this. Thank you very much indeed to Belinda, to John, and to Adam, and to all the people who were in the middle section of that show. So many, and too many of them to mention. We will run the cast list names over and over and over again so that you can pick them up. It's been a pleasure as ever. It's been Tour Live. Next weekend will be done on the Friday afternoon / evening after the manager's done his press conference, because next weekend looks ahead to Manchester United. This one, though, we decided to pull it a little bit earlier. So hope you've enjoyed it. We'll see you later.
Sports Social Podcast Network.